What's up, guys? Welcome to Birdwatch. I'm Christian Clark, the Pelicans beat writer for NOLA.com and The Advocate. Here today, a couple hours after the Pelicans were officially knocked out of the postseason, a pretty disappointing loss to the Spurs. They made it close in the end, but it really wasn't, you know, a terribly competitive game. They got in a big hole early on, and they were just weren't able to really dig out of it. That's kind of been their story in the bubble so far. I wanted to go over today's loss and kind of what's to come next for this team with Andrew Lopez of ESPN, someone you guys know really well. Andrew, what's going on? What did you make of that today?
I'm pretty sure that the intro that you just gave, Pelicans fall behind early, come back, make it a game, fall behind late, could be said about a number of games this year. And I think that's the problem inside the bubble, outside the bubble. And it was just, the consistency was never there with this team throughout the year. And I think that was kind of the big thing to me is they stretch together some bad games, but then you're like, man, they're not really this bad. And then they stretch together some good games, and you're like, oh, man, like, are they really this good? And I guess the answer was somewhere in the middle. But I know the end kind of maybe didn't go the way some fans would have wanted, but if you'd have said, you know, beginning of the season, this team would have been in the playoff race toward, I guess we can say this is the last week of the season, I guess. And they end up finishing 11th or 12th, or, you know, I guess technically they're going to be 10th in the lottery standings. But you'd have took it. But I think because of the disappointment, it does kind of sting a little bit for Pelicans fans. But, you know, this has just been an inconsistent team all year.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And, you know, the thing I've been kind of wrestling with in the hours after this game is just how much stock should you put into these games, because it is such a weird situation. I mean, like, there's just probably never going to be another time where, you know, they're not able to play 5-on-5 for 4 months straight. But on the other hand, too, it's like all these teams went through the same exact thing. Yep. And, you know, the Pelicans were really, you know, one of the few who just didn't really look like they wanted to be there for a lot of it. I mean, I would say 3 of the 6 games you could question their effort, and that's just not a great sign. It's just not very fun to have to sit here and talk after a must-win game about did a team give enough effort. I mean, the answer was clearly no in this game. I mean, JJ Redick, you know, pretty much said it. Like, we just you know, we weren't trying hard enough from the beginning. Zion Williamson said the same thing. I mean, you don't have to look too deep. The Pelicans didn't try hard enough.
Yeah, it was nice to hear JJ. You know, obviously you knew JJ was what he was going to say. JJ's always going to have that, I think, type of reaction to these games. But I think the hearing Zion say, you know, that wasn't acceptable was pretty good to me. I liked hearing him be upset. Like, I think you want him to be upset about something like this. And we asked this to Gentry, we asked this to Drew more than one occasion. We asked them about the effort, and they all said, no, it's not effort. It's, you know, this team is making shots, or this team is doing this. I can't agree with that. Like, it was clearly effort at times. Was it effort all the way through? I don't think that. I think you know, there were times that you cared. There were players who cared, I think 100%. But the problem is you didn't have that kind of impact for 48 minutes. There was one game early on where I remember JJ Redick saying, I think it was the Utah Jazz game, the first one, where JJ said, we played a 42-minute game. And I think there was just a lot of instances of the Pelicans playing 42 or less minute games. And that was the major problem, is they couldn't get things going. And the starts are inexcusable. There's no way you should start like that. And at least twice, I think they fell behind by double digits in the first 3 to 4 minutes, and then came back to tie it in the next 4 to 5 minutes. And it's like, where was that to start the game. And that doesn't make much sense. And then the clutch issues, I think, have plagued this team for quite some time, not just this version. And I think that is also another problem that needs to be looked at once we do get to an off season, whenever an off season actually shows up.
Yeah, I think, the clutch issues this season are understandable. They're a really young team. I think for the most part, young teams just go through those sort of growing pains. I mean, just the effort is not what's understandable at all. I thought in this game against San Antonio, J.J. Redick was, one of the only guys who you can confidently say, went balls to the wall for 48 minutes. I mean, maybe you could throw in Josh Hart. I mean, I thought Josh, gave really good effort for the most part during these six games of bubble play, but I don't think there's a lot of other guys you can lump in there. And, I understand why fans are so mad. I mean, that is incredibly frustrating. And when you ask, well, why was the effort bad? I think coaching is a discussion you can have. I think that's part of it. But I will say, too, I think the Pelicans' issues, go deeper than just coaching. I mean, I think part of it is, do you have enough dogs on this roster? I mean, I think part of it is just NBA teams, they take on the personality of their best player. I mean, I think it's a question of who the Pelicans' best player is. I mean, Zion Williamson, when he's healthy, clearly. But I don't think Zion was in the proper shape to give the effort that he wanted and we're accustomed to seeing. I mean, you can just turn on the tape of what he looked like at Duke compared to what he looks like at now. I mean, he's a monster on offense. That's not going to change, no matter even if he's not in the best shape. But he just can't move on defense right now. I mean, I think even if he wanted to, he couldn't move the way he needs to.
No, and I think that's a big thing. And Zion looked a lot different to me than regular season Zion, even after the start with the minutes. I know it's probably not what fans want to hear, but when you're someone of Zion's body size and body type, 13 days without basketball activity is going to affect you in a different way than it's going to affect if me or you went 13 days without basketball activity and tried to get out there. We might be sore the next day or whatever it is, but it's going to affect Zion differently. And he didn't look like the same person. There was only a limited amount of 5-on-5 work that he was able to do. But his getting his conditioning to a top level is something that they're going to have to work on with him. I think throughout, the early portion of his career, he is a guy who is going to have to, and this is, this is something we talked about before the season. He's going to have to make a LeBron James level of commitment to his body in the offseason in order to play 78, 82 games a year. Obviously, if the Pelicans hope close to 100 games a year, if you're pushing in the playoffs. But for him to get there, there's work to do. He did not look like the defensive guy that he was at Duke at all. You got to remember there were people talking about him. I don't know if it was this bad, or this good, I should say. There were people talking about him as being the best offensive and defensive prospect in the 2019 draft. So there was a lot there, and he didn't look as ready as I think he would have liked to be. And I do think some of his frustrations in the bubble were because of that and because of the way they were, kind of handling his minutes. There was a part in the game on Sunday where he scores the first 8 points. He scores 8 straight points in the third quarter. He makes that great spin move on Pirtle, gets to the goal, dunks it, and then next possession he's out. And that's when you kind of see him on the bench, kind of hit, that like he threw a towel down or something. Not like he was, like angry, but he was upset at the situation. And I think to me, that's kind of the biggest thing is he has to get better on the defensive end right away. And you saw glimpses during the regular season, but he's got to get back to where he was even in the regular season where he was, you know, playable on defense, before he makes that next leap. But I think for him to do that, he's going to have to make that commitment to his body in the off season to get where he needs to be.
Yeah, I saw some people on Twitter saying after this game, you know, smart people too, like Kevin Pelton, who you know, I have a lot of respect for, saying, you know, Zion has not been good in the bubble. I don't know if I would go that far. I mean, I don't know if, like, I would just consider him a net negative. I probably not. But I hear the point.
Points in 20 minutes a night is still good. It's not, but I get it because he hasn't been there on the defensive end. But I think his offense just outweighs that. I mean, he was still a 56% shooter in the bubble. He was still he averaged what I think. I just had it up. He averaged 18.4 points in 20.7 minutes a game. I mean, that's pretty damn good. So I don't know if he was a negative, but he was clearly better in the actual regular season.
Oh, I would agree with that completely. And you know, I think, you know, the steal and the block numbers are something you can look at. You know, go look at his steal and block rates at Duke. He was just an absolute monster at forcing turnovers. He was first in the ACC in steals, sixth in blocks. He's played over 100 minutes inside the bubble now, and he has not had a steal or a block. Yeah, it's pretty crazy. And that was, you know, he didn't have zero before this break, but the steal and the block numbers were way down. He just wasn't that guy who could come out of nowhere on the defensive end. And I even think he was more mobile. I mean, as far as his body goes, like J.J. Redick has said it publicly, I mean, Zion can literally be the best player in the NBA if he decides to get in really good shape. I think that's totally true. Like, Giannis Antetokounmpo this year is going to win MVP, and he might win Defensive Player of the Year. I've seen Zion play 24 games, and I don't think I'm being hyperbolic when I'm saying Zion has that ceiling. Like, he can legitimately be that guy in a couple years if he decides to just go all in on working on his body. But that's an enormous if.
And here's to this. And this is not... this is not just us saying these things. This is not just media hyping up Zion. Like, NBA folks are saying, like J.J. Redick, who, I mean, I would respect J.J. Redick's opinion on most things basketball, on damn near all things basketball. J.J. Redick is the guy saying he can be the number one guy on a championship team. He can be an MVP. Like guys who are in the league who know basketball, who have played basketball, know what this guy can do. B. There's a reason why, as good as Ja Morant was, it was a no doubter who the Pelicans should have taken at number one. I mean, nobody tried to come through and say, even back then, maybe there was one or two guys who were going to say it and then go back, oh no, I said. No one really thought that he shouldn't have been number one. And because of the generational type talent. That's why the NBA put the Pelicans on opening night. That's why the NBA put the Pelicans on Christmas Day. That's why the NBA put the Pelicans to open Summer League last year in prime time and then open the bubble. It's because of Zion Williamson. And they recognize the star power that he has. And he came into the league as the most hyped rookie since LeBron. And yeah, I don't think it is just hype, but he does need to make a commitment to getting everything under control. And I think if he can get his body where he wants, to where he can consistently play 75 to 82 games a year in the regular season, and we don't have to worry about conditioning, and even if he's playing 32, 35 minutes a night, he is going to be a force. I mean, just look at what he was able to do offensively when he was, you know, seemingly, quote, out of shape, consider, you know, of how he played in the bubble. There's that one game where he jumps from outside the lane for that layup on right at the goal where Drew's trying to tell him to pass it out to somebody on the three-pointer, and he just goes up and he just lays it in. He does ridiculous things on the offensive end. His touch around the rim is just insane. I mean, there's at least, I can make you a video clip of 20 shots this year where he's been around the goal, and I'm like, all right, there's no way that's going in. And then somehow the ball gets in the rim, and I'm like, I don't even understand. So he is he is still a generational type talent. Like, don't let these bad six games or five games for him throw anybody off. But if he wants to unlock those next levels, there's a commitment that he's going to have to make.
Yeah, the touch around the rim is crazy. And if you just sit there and watch him warm up, I feel like he misses a lot of bunnies too. Like, I think he's totally a guy where, you know, when the lights come on, I mean, he can just turn it on. I mean, that game against the first game against the Spurs was a perfect example of just, you know, hitting four threes out of nowhere. You know, he's so good
I still can't believe that happened. that was one of the more ridiculous things I've ever seen in person.
Yeah. I mean, he's so good that his bad games are good. Like, I would consider this, this most recent game against the Spurs, a bad game for him. And he ends up with 25 points. He makes half his shots. He gets to the free throw line six times. Like, he didn't really do anything in the first half. And then it's like in the third quarter, it's like boom, 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 boom. And then you look up, it's like, oh my God, he has 25 points. I think he's only played one bad, bad game. And that was against the Clippers when, you know, they were just getting crushed. And it was like, what's the point anyway? I mean, even his bad games are good. It's unbelievable.
And I think this is what you can look at. In the 19 games that he played this season, he had, heading into the bubble, only four of the first 19 games that he had a negative plus minus. He's had a negative plus minus now four of the five games he's played in the bubble. And all four have been way worse. I think today was minus 21. That was the worst one of his career. But he was minus 12, minus 16, minus 17. Those are the four worst plus minus games of his young career. His previous worst was the minus 11, I think, against the Bucks, where the Bucks really kind of just took him out of his element. That game, he was 5-19. So to me, there's still so much there where he has so much really to grow. And I think because of the way he was playing before, the expectations were so high for him, and missing those three scrimmages, not having that, you know, missing all that basketball activity, it really did hurt him. I go back to what I said earlier. I know, like, how can somebody who's this good lose so much in 2 weeks? And it's just, he has a unique body type. He is not going to be a guy that fits into a box of he can miss this and then not come back. Other guys who, like, there were other guys who missed time who were on schedules. Now, granted, they weren't on teams who were trying to fight for a playoff spot, but, you know, I don't think playoffs were ever the ultimate goal for this team this year. And they accomplished some things that they wanted to accomplish, ultimately, even though, you know, things were within reach there at the end.
So if you would have asked me before these six games, like, is this stretch of bubble play going to change your opinion about the Pelicans that much? I probably would have said no. These are just such strange circumstances. I don't think they changed my opinion at Zion that much at all. I pretty much think the same thing I think about him. I think my opinions about, you know, maybe Lonzo Ball and Derek Favors' fit in this team have shifted slightly. I think they both have had pretty poor showings so far. Maybe we could start with Lonzo in particular, because
driving the Lonzo train all year, so I can feel my bandwagon's a little bit lighter behind me right now. But Zoe, it was a disappointing bubble for Zoe. His last games before the break, his last five games, he was averaging 20.8 points, 7.8 assists, 7.8 rebounds, 2.2 steals, and shooting 53% from the field, 51% from deep, while I think making 3.5 or 4 3-pointers a game. Absolutely his best ball that he had played all year. Bubble Lonzo was not. Bubble Lonzo averaged 5.5 points, I think 6.8 assists, 5.7 rebounds in there. Oh, steals were almost cut in half, and then the shooting was way down, 26%. 19.7 from three. It was about as bad as he had played all year. Following the game, somebody tweeted those stats out, and he said, make sure you tweet my blank next year. And to me, it was just that was like, look, I was disappointed because I thought they would be able to continue what they started, and it just didn't look like his interest level was there at times, whether that was diving for loose balls or I think when Alvin Gentry said it on after the Spurs game, he said, I think we need to do a better job of letting mistakes go and moving on to the next play. Here it is. I think we've got to do a little bit better job of being able to move on to the next play when things are not going good. I think that kind of speaks to Zoe. There's some turnovers that Zoe does where he hesitates on the next play. He looks to the ref or he does something. And the other team's off and running. And it's like, dude, get back real quick. You can complain after. And I'm not selling all of my Lonzo stock right now, but I get fans who are now completely off of the Lonzo bandwagon because it is so frustrating for him to have been playing so well really from December to the hiatus and to just have six really bad games once he got to Orlando.
Yeah, Lonzo, I think, is such a polarizing player in part because he's such a unique player. I mean, the people that love Lonzo, I mean, if you say anything bad about Lonzo on the internet, first of all, they'll find you. I mean,
they were coming after him for when, remember that first stretch where Frank played like an extra 2 minutes and people were like, what, where's Lonzo? It's like, it's just minutes, dude, like relax.
Yeah, well, the people that love Lonzo will say, oh, he makes everyone around him better. He's a brilliant playmaker. You just don't get it. And, you know, my response is, I think I do get it, and I appreciate it. I loved watching Lonzo at UCLA. I totally get that part of it. My question, I guess, is, look, he's a 6'6" point guard who doesn't really like to drive the basketball. He doesn't want to get in the paint. He doesn't seem to have great touch around the rim. He doesn't seem to relish contact. I mean, he doesn't really get to the free throw line. He's not a very good free throw shooter when he does get there. How good can a guard be if he just won't drive the basketball, even if he's good in a lot of other areas, which Lonzo is?
Yeah, that is – you saw him, and I think he had an aversion to attacking in part because of his bad free throw numbers. And I think for a while he was – a little, he didn't really want to get around the rim, essentially. He didn't want to go get fouled because for the first 2 years of his career, he was a 43% free throw shooter. He was not very good at the free throw line, period. And I think that affected him. You kind of saw his free throw rate was still very low this year. I think his high in a game was 6. His career high is 7. That's just not something he does. I do think that as he was starting to get more confident with his shot, you saw him start to go a little more. I think there was a game in the bubble where he went to the rim like 2 times in the same quarter and tried to finish at the rim, and I was like, oh, this is kind of new. So there are still leaps that he has to make in his game, but I think ideally Lonzo is going to be at his best when he is next to another guard who can create in the half court.
Isn't Drew that guy?
You would think Drew is that guy. And Drew, that has never been one of Drew's strengths, I think. Drew has a lot of strengths as a basketball player. But even Drew will tell you he doesn't like being the point guard. He doesn't like being that guy. Drew's decision-making in the half court is questionable at times. He tries to make the pass that just shouldn't be made. This whole team tried to make passes that shouldn't be made, I think, for parts of the bubble where they were trying to get scoop passes to Favors or Zion or whoever. I think when he will be at his best when he can play. I don't want to say as the off guard, because I do think his long range passing ability is just phenomenal. And I think when you're pushing it, he's great. When he's in the half court, that's where you have questions. And as good as Drew is, I don't think Drew is the ideal fit next to him. They were supposed to be a great defensive unit, and that never really came to pass. But I think that the two of them together can bring out some good qualities into both of them. But ideally, I'd like Zoe next to someone who can get me into my half court sets in and out. But that being said, I don't know if there's another point guard that I'd rather have right now running with Zion in the full court. And that's the conundrum of Lonzo Ball, is that he seemingly unlocks the best out of Zion, but there are all these other things that kind of come with it, because their chemistry on the spin dunk, on the spin lob, is insane. We've seen Zion try to get Drew or Frank or some of these other guys to throw it to him, and it's just not there. Zoe can read it, and it's up, it's gone. The long range 50-foot oops. I mean, there since Second Spectrum has been tracking data on that for like the last 6 or 7 years, no one has completed more than 2 50-foot oops with a dunk. Lonzo and Zion did it 4 times in a span of 20 games. So it's just so much there, and I think they are so perfect for each other, but there's just so many other questions that are there.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I mean, there's no point guard I'd rather have next to Zion in full court situations, as you just said. I mean, as far as the guard to fit in between Lonzo and Zion, I mean, I think probably the ideal player is someone who is really good at hitting threes off the dribble. I mean, obviously, yeah, like a Damian Lillard, I mean, that's not going to happen. But like a guy who's just elite at hitting threes off the dribble, you can go pick and roll with Zion, and if they go to a Zion, he's just going to hit a three, because Lonzo, I think, still got a lot of work to do in terms of attacking in the pick and roll. If you have Lonzo just spotting up, I think that's a pretty good position for him, and he can move the ball really quickly. So I think that's an interesting question. I hesitate to say this after a game in which Lonzo and Drew just went 4 for 22. I mean, they collectively could not have played much worse, but I'm not going to overreact here. I'd still feel pretty good if that was my backcourt, at the start of next year. And my guess right now is it probably will be. I mean, Drew has a year left in his deal. I guess they have a decision to make there. But I still feel pretty good about those two guys. I just want to see a little bit more, even though, God, this bubble has been disappointing for those guys.
And I'll say this, and it doesn't necessarily have to be a guard who can. It's just a player. Let me, I guess, rephrase that a little bit. Even if Brandon Ingram can start to do more things in the half court, I just think you need another playmaker on that side of the ball who can do some different things. Obviously, Drew is going to do what Drew is going to do, and your teams are you're going to be better with Drew Holiday just because of the defense that he's going to bring and his ability to just take away one person. When he goes first team all Drew mode, it's incredible. But I don't know if it's Brandon Ingram taking that step. I mean, there were some times in LA where Luke Walton experimented with point guard Brandon Ingram, and I think he does have that ability. But get him to that confident level, and you can do some things. I just think you need to unleash the optimal Lonzo. You just need another strong playmaker in the half court to help unleash this offense completely.
Yeah, I think that's fair. As far as the other starting spot that I think is a pretty big question mark for next year, the biggest one is center. How this team did this year was so much tied to how Derek Favors performed. I mean, obviously he just wasn't in the lineup the early part of the year, and they really struggled. They kind of turned it around as he got back. He's had a pretty rough bubble game so far. Do you expect Fave to be back next year?
If you'd have asked me this before the bubble, I would have said yes, I did. Now I'm still gonna lean. I really don't know. I'm gonna be honest. I'm kind of 50-50 on it now. I like. I don't know if he's the guy that I'd want starting playing 28 minutes anymore right now. Even though, like that's what was so tricky about those 19 games with Zion, is that starting five of Lonzo, Drew, BI, Zion, Favors, their numbers were insane. The plus 10 net ratings, the defensive ratings for Favors were under, like, it was ridiculous. And it's like, man, that doesn't make sense, because you would think next to Zion you want a floor spacer, and it didn't. It played out, I think, the way other people thought in the bubble, and that's where they were getting raced, and Favors didn't look like he belonged on the court at times, but there was other times where he looked like that guy still. And I think that level of inconsistency is kind of what drives Pelicans fans mad. Even though I think Fave had a couple of double doubles down there, I don't think fans wanted to even acknowledge that.
Yeah, the game against Washington was like really the only one he had to like, yeah, good game for him.
Yeah, and so to me, I think if I'm bringing him back, I think if I'm bringing him back, I'm not bringing him back as a starter. I think I'm bringing him back as more of a role player, a teacher, a spot guy, and I maybe it's, let's see what Jackson can do now. Jackson has a lot of untapped potential, but Jackson Zion out there, they're not putting up the best rebound numbers. That is where they are both very weak at. I think, he still needs to get so much better on that end. And to me, it's just there's a lot there to want, but you got to just let him go, I think, at this point. I mean, but if I'm Jackson Hayes, I can't post a 12, like a 13% rebounding percentage, and be a starting center in the NBA. So that's where I think there's still, to me, questions about what Jackson can do.
Yeah, I mean, I think
Not,
if your goal is to make the
yeah.
playoffs next year, I don't think you can go into it with Jackson Hayes as
No.
your starting center. As far as that Ball, Holiday, Ingram, Zion, Favors starting five, like you said, the numbers were so good before the pause in play. They stink in these games in the bubble.
They look so bad.
Reconciling those two things, I've seen people say that, oh, teams were shooting the three really poorly against them before the bubble, and that's kind of turned around. I don't think that group is as good as the numbers would suggest before the break, but I definitely don't think they're as bad
They're as
as we've
bad,
seen
yeah.
now. If they just ran it back with that group, I really do believe that they could contend for a playoff spot. I think they'd be like a good team. I think that like they probably could go, 500, maybe a little north of there. I mean, obviously Zion and Favors, that's not an ideal fit. I mean, Favors is neither a guy who can hit threes or he's not really much of a lob finisher. And I think you definitely want to have one of those qualities at least. Probably the 3-point thing is the biggest thing. So I would, like to see them at least pursue some other options, but I don't think it would be, the biggest bummer in the world if Fave is back. But it's a really interesting thing, just team building around Zion Williamson. I mean, I think he can play a lot of minutes at the five for you going forward, but they can't just start him there or anything like that.
No, I do think he can finish there. There's not too many teams that are going to finish with a big on the floor that he's not going to be able to handle. And on the opposite end, he should be able to get around most guys like that. I do think if Fave comes back, I'd like to see him back in that kind of that mentor role, still playing 20 to 24 minutes a night. But it is a question of how do you unleash the next level of Zion. And I think to do that, ideally you need a someone who can basically let Zion be the five on offense and play the four, and then guard fives on the other end. And I'm not saying this is like a guy like Miles Turner comes to mind in the sense of someone who can stretch the defense a little bit, stretch the defense a little bit, make threes, and then go on the other side. Like someone of that mold, I think is what fits. I know he's your favorite, but I don't, you know, I have questions about Melly doing that long term, but I like Melly as where he is in his role right now.
Yeah, Melly's a good bench guy, He's a good bench guy.
His bench role right now, I think he works in limited minutes next to Z, but that's the type of player I think that will unlock the next level of Zion offensively.
And just to be clear, just because I like making puns about Nicola Melli on the internet, I don't think I'm not clamoring for him to get 32 or 35 minutes a night at starting center. I just want to make that point real quick.
But if he did get 32 to 35 minutes at starting center, you wouldn't be disappointed.
Well, I don't think I would be tweeting peanut butter Melli time if he was playing that much. I don't think it would go great. You know, I think, you know, my peanut butter Melli time sweet spot is like, yeah, those were, you know, five fun bench minutes there.
I still hate you for that, by the way. There's so much I hate about it. I hate that it actually makes somewhat sense. I hate that there's a peanut butter Melli time GIF out there. Like, there's just so much about it that I just hate.
Yeah, but you're actually a good sport about it. Like, Will Guillory actually hates me because of it. Like, when Will Guillory sees me walk into the press room, I just see him, like, look at his phone and, like, mutter something under his breath and, like, shake his head. He's like, this fucking guy again. Peanut butter Melly time ass dude.
If you should just, like, bring peanut butter and jelly sandwiches to the next time we actually are able to see each other in availability, and just hand them, like, put, like, Melly's face on it. And just hand one to Will.
Well, I've heard rumblings from some people on the PR team that maybe they're trying to convince Melly to dress up like a banana for next Halloween. And if that happens, look out. That's all I'm saying.
I'm going to say this, man. If that happens, you will have peaked, and you should probably look for other work. I don't think it's going to get better in this line of business.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to my employer and immediately asking for like a 20% raise if that happens.
Good luck.
Yeah. What does this actually have to do with like driving subscribers? I'm like, nothing. But did you see him, the picture of him in the banana costume?
Did we get views off of this? Did we do anything? No, I did that. So I want money. Yeah. So it's a very logical thing to say.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Look at the internet, guys.
I'm telling you, we hopefully, if we get into Smoothie King Center next year and there's a video of Nicola Melli dancing in a peanut butter, I mean, in a banana suit to peanut butter jelly time, that's it. That's going to be your peak.
Okay, Andrew, before we go, in one sentence, how would you sum up bubble play for the Pelicans?
I could do it in one word: disappointing. That's easy. I know there's still two games left, but to not be in the playoff race with two games left is very disappointing. Other teams in the bubble came ready to play, and you didn't. The Phoenix Suns came ready to play. The San Antonio Spurs came ready to play. Portland, Memphis still came ready to play, even though Memphis has struggled. With everything that they're doing, I mean, they're still hanging on. It was obviously going to be tough for them to be there, but, you know, they're doing it without Jaren Jackson. Like, they're still hanging tough and playing hard. I think that for a lot of fans, like, that's all they wanted from the Pels was just play hard. Even going into Sunday when Alvin says, hey, we're going to go play with a Game 7 intensity level, and then you come out and you're down 14-3, and Lonzo, they go to take the timeout when you cross half court, and Lonzo sticks the ball out to where it can get stolen for a dunk. Like, that is the things that it's like, man, that's just terrible. So, I can sum it up one word: disappointing. Easy.
Yeah, I mean, guys just, you know, casually throwing the ball out of bounds, guys not hustling back on defense, you know, being out there.
Complaining about calls.
Yeah, like, that's just not stuff you should have to see as a fan base from your team, and essentially an elimination game. I mean, I get why fans are pissed. I mean, I think Zion said it best. That's unacceptable. So a lot of questions for this team to answer. You know, I coach, obviously, but I think a lot more than that, too. Thanks for hopping on tonight, man. And I know this feels pretty bad right now for Pels fans, but I promise you the future is still bright. I'm still optimistic about where this is headed. And I've been trying to talk myself off the ledge in the couple hours since this game.
I'll say this. The future is still very, very bright with this team. Zion is still a generational type talent. You've seen the flashes from Nikhil and Jackson this year. I mean, Brandon Ingram turned himself into a damn all-star. Let's be real. Like, there is still plenty of things to like, and you have assets. You can go out and do a lot of different things. You have a lot of second round picks this year. You have those future Lakers picks, so you can make some moves. I think you're in the right direction. And if we'd have told you in the beginning of the year, you're gonna fall, you know, three games short of the playoffs, but be in it toward the end, I think you would have taken it. And the fact that you're not there now, okay, I know it stings because of the way it happened, but the future is still very, very bright for this franchise.
All right, guys. Appreciate you guys for listening this week. We'll talk to you again soon. You guys have a good one.